to the Gospel of Luke this morning. Luke chapter 15. Good morning. I'm Stephen. It's a blessing to be with you today, and we are so thankful to have you with us as we worship together. As Dave said, this text is often referred to as the story of the prodigal son. And yes, the problem with that is that we emphasize one of the children more than the other. We tend to think of it basically being about the bad kid, the black sheep of the family who goes off and does bad things. The reality is that this is a story about God, the Father, and the two parts of all of us that are in constant combat within ourselves, in our soul. Within each and every human being, we can have awareness that we have a Father, right? We can have awareness that there is a God. We can be aware of that. But we tend to, even in our faith, in our journey of faith, we tend to move to one extreme or the other. We tend to think, okay, I've got a Father in heaven, and I want the Father in heaven to be happy, and I want the Father in heaven to give me stuff. And so I'm going to obey all the rules and check off the list and check it twice because I don't want to be found naughty. I want to be found nice, right? So the tendency of one of the brothers is to stay home with the Father, to be physically near the Father, to obey the Father, to do everything he thinks the Father wants him to do so he can have stuff and so he can have what he wants. He does not have a deep personal relationship and kinship with the Father. He is distant from the Father, but he is aware of the Father. The other son is aware of the Father, but says to the Father, I just want my stuff now, and I'm just going to hit the road and go do my thing, and I'm really not going to be concerned with what you want. So the two extremes of our human nature is to either say, okay, I'm going to be religious, I'm going to find a God, I'm going to do this God thing, and I'm going to follow all the rules because I want the God to give me stuff. And the other extreme is I just don't even want to mess with it, I'm not going to worry about the rules, I just want God to give me stuff, and I'm just going to do whatever I want, right? So that's what we have. We have extreme liberality, extreme freedom and liberality, and I go do whatever I want. Or extreme legalism, right? Where I have to do everything because if I don't do it, my dad's not going to like me, all right? So let's look at the text, verse 11 through 31. The very beginning, Luke tells this story in this narrative, and he introduces it by saying in verse 11, a man had two sons. As Dave said, it's a parable of two sons. It's not a parable of one son. It's a parable of two. A man had two sons. A younger son and an older son. Well, in this culture, who would be the one to normally get most of the inheritance? The older son. Because in this culture, if you were born first and if you were male, then you would be dominant and you would get a bigger piece of the pie. You would be seen as the person who would be in charge of the estate when the father passes away and dies. The younger son would be secondary and would really be at the will of the older brother, right? So really, the younger son doesn't really have any power or voice. Now, in this culture, then, it kind of makes sense that the younger son would be the one to say what? Hey, just give me what you're going to give me, and I'm going to hit the road. Because he's going to be in subjection to his older brother, right, whenever the father dies. The younger brother goes to the father and says, Father, give me my share of the property, or give me my share of the estate or inheritance. And so the father divided the property, the wealth, and the assets between the two sons. And that's another thing we skip over in the story, is Jesus doesn't tell the story, Luke doesn't give us the story where Jesus tells the story that there's just one son who gets his part of the inheritance. The father gives the two sons their inheritance. It's just that one of the sons knows what he's received, but what does he receive? He receives the farm. And where is he at on the farm? What does he receive? He receives the sheep and the goats, and he takes care of the sheep. In other words, he stays home, right? He follows the rules. He keeps going to church every Sunday, and he takes communion every Sunday, and he shows up, and he maybe, you know, teaches cradle roll class once in a while, right? So you've got this kid who sees himself with the father as having to stay home, do the right thing, and obey the father in order to be accepted by the father. Whereas the younger son is like, I'm just going to skip the whole living here till you die thing, and I just want you to give me my stuff now. And that's actually what he is saying to his father. In this time and in this culture, for you to go to your parent, to go to them and say, I'd like to have my inheritance now, you're basically saying, I consider you dead to me. That's what he's saying. He's saying, Dad, I'm not going to hang around here. I'm not going to be around you. I'm out of here. So you're dead to me already. Isn't that harsh? It's a really harsh thing to say. And so what's happened in our culture, especially in my lifetime, all the sermons I've heard about the prodigal son have tended to focus on the prodigal being the bad guy. Whereas the self-righteous, legalistic brother that stays home is a good guy. Well, actually, the story is about two sons, and they both are wrong. Neither of them have a personal, intimate relationship with the father. One sees the father, hangs around on the farm, may go and sit at the table and eat dinner with him, but that doesn't mean he's in a relationship with the father. So there's a difference in being in a relationship with God. Just because he's your father and you trust and you love God, no matter whether you get the treasures and the assets and the wealth or not, you're just in a relationship with the father because the father gives you safety and security just because he's your daddy. And there's a difference in having a relationship with God as your papa and as your father than in seeing him as some distant, judgmental, harsh father figure who's just out to punish you if you don't obey and do the right thing. So there's two sons, and there are two distributions of the wealth. And so the father doesn't just do this for the younger son. When the younger son says, I want my part of the inheritance, he says, okay, here's your part of the inheritance. But he gives the other part of the inheritance to who? To the son who stays home. So he gets a part of his inheritance too. Now we don't know exactly what this means. Some have researched this, and some scholars argue that this would be done in thirds, and that he would have given one son a third, the other son a third, and he would have kept a third since he's still alive for himself. So we don't know exactly how that worked out. But I just want you to understand that the older brother gets proportion his inheritance before the father dies, just as he gives it part of the inheritance to his younger son. Do you see that point? If I give you my inheritance before I'm dead, I'm telling you I'm dead to you. You're telling me if you take it that I'm dead to you and you're dead to me. Does that make sense? So there is no personal relationship between either son and their father. Does that make sense? This is really important to understand the story Jesus is telling. Jesus is talking about two boys who have a father who both don't consider them to be personally alive and in relationship. Okay? Verse 13. So sometime later, time passes. The younger son gathers up all of his stuff. He travels, the younger son, to a faraway place, to a distant country, and he wastes and he squanders all of his money on foolish living, on reckless and wild behavior. After the younger son had spent everything there was, then a severe famine came and hit the country, and the son was poor and he was hungry. So whatever this amount of money is, he squanders it all. Now we know that never happens in our culture, right? You ever hear people, they win the lottery, and they'll have, $2 million or something, and they'll go through it, just in a matter of months or weeks, and then they have nothing all over again. So he has his inheritance. He gets this abundance of wealth. He could have gone down the road, bought a piece of property, started his own place, right? But he wasn't interested in investing it. He was interested in what? Feeding the appetites of his gut, of his own stomach, of his own will to do whatever he wants. See, what he does is he's not only considering his father dead, but he's rebelling against his father's God, his father's religion, his father's rules. He's saying, I don't want to do what you do. I don't want to live like you live. I'm going to go do my way, my thing, my way. The other son stays at home. He knows he's got all this inheritance himself. He stays at home. He does everything the father might want him to do. He's totally preoccupied with obeying the father's rules. But he's not doing it in a relationship with the father that he loves the father. He's doing it in order to make sure the father does what? The father says, okay, I'll love you again today. He sees his relationship with his father as some sort of transactionary relationship. Well, Daughtry, you're my wife. I'll take out the trash because I have to, because you'll be mad at me and you won't let me eat my, you know, scrambled eggs tomorrow or something like that. In other words, it's I do it for you because you do it for me, and it's all transactionary. It's not about I just love you and I know you love me, so I'll do this for you or I'll do this for us. It's a big difference in being obedient to rules than in being in a relationship with God. And that's what this is about. One son stays home, obeys the rules, follows the legalism. The other son abandons the rules and runs off and does whatever he wants. So after he finds himself in this place of poverty, he gets a job. Well, there you go. Nothing like going out and getting a job to teach you to respect, you know, your money, right, and the money you make. But the job he gets is to work for someone who raises pigs. Now, to a Jewish person, what is the most repulsive animal to hang around? Pigs. They're considered unclean by the Hebrew scriptures and the Torah. These are unclean animals. You wouldn't eat bacon for breakfast and no sausage. Unless it was turkey sausage. Maybe turkey. I don't know. Are turkeys legal? I don't know. We'll have to research that. So he raises these pigs, and so he goes to work. So what Jesus is saying when he points this out, he's saying that he not only had a really tough job and a dirty job and a sort of a low-income job, but he had to work with pigs. He had already, Jesus had already said that he's running wild, he's doing all kinds of crazy stuff, blowing all of his money. But then what's even worse than that? Taking care of pigs makes it even worse. This is degrading work. It is unclean work. A Hebrew could not be clean as long as he's hanging around these pigs. This is detestable to the Jewish people. Verse 16, the son was so hungry that he wanted to eat the pods that the pigs were eating. But no one gave him anything. Now, when I grew up, I always thought that the younger son ate the pods, that he ate the slop. That's what we used to call it when I was growing up. You'd go out and slop the hogs, because slop was the stuff left over from the week of mom's throw out stuff, all the things she'd throw out, and that slop would go out and you'd throw it into a big bucket out in the pig pen, and the pigs would eat it. He didn't even get to eat the slop. Nobody fed him anything. So he was starving. He was hungry. He had no food, even though he was working. He didn't have any food. Verse 17, when he came to his senses, Jesus said, when he came to his senses, he thought, all of my father's servants have more than I have. See, he didn't think, wow, my dad loves me, and I should go home to my dad because he loves me. That's not what he thought. Just like his older brother back home, he wasn't thinking, I'm going to get up today and help my dad on his estate because I love him and he loves me. See, it wasn't about a relationship. They were both wrong. They were both distant emotionally and relationally from the father. So he thought, well, I'll just go back and I'll just be a servant. I'm dying of hunger. Verse 18, I will get up and I will go to my father and I will say to him. So he's practicing this as he's walking on the road back to his hometown. He's saying, okay, I'm going to say this to my dad. This is what I'm going to say. Why do you practice over and over and over what you're going to say before you say it? Like, you know, say, remember you guys when you first asked your girlfriend or your wife out and you didn't know how to say it? It was because you're kind of scared, right? That she wouldn't say yes or she wouldn't like you. So there's fear there. So this younger son is fearful that his father will do what? Will tell him to just go back where you came from. He doesn't believe the Father is going to receive him. So he says, he practices this on the road home. He says, Father, I've sinned against God, and I've sinned against you. So not only is he starting to change his way of thinking, but what comes into the picture besides even his Father? God. What does God want for me? So when he repents and turns and goes back home, he's not only saying, I've sinned against you, Dad, but I've sinned against God. I've sinned against Yahweh. Father, I've sinned against you, and I am no longer worthy to be called your son. This language is very powerful to this culture. In our culture, there are some families that still, sadly, their child might come home and say, well, this is what I'm doing, or this is what I'm thinking, or this is what's happening for me. And the parent might say, okay, you're dead to me. Get out and never come back, right? That still happens. It doesn't happen, at least in this culture, as much as it used to. But the idea was, is you're not worthy anymore to be my child. If you behave a certain way, or you do certain things, or you hang out with certain people, you're dead to me. So this is very common language. The father is dead to the kids, and the father would consider the children dead to him. He says, I'm no longer worthy to be called your son, but let me just be one of your hired servants. Let me be a slave that works. Because he's figuring, even if I work on the farm with the animals and it's a dirty, messy job, at least Dad's going to give me some food. I'm not going to starve to death. He's wanting to survive, and so he goes home. Verse 20, so the son left and he went to his father. While the son was still a long way off, the father saw him. Now, why would the father see him from a long way off? Because the father was always looking for the son to come home. Right? Which tells us that the father isn't waiting inside his castle behind his, you know, moat and big, you know, walls and big stone walls and doors and stuff, and waiting for the son to come home and beg and plead and repent. But that God is just waiting for us to come home. The father is waiting for the son to come home. Every day, all the time, he's waiting. He's looking down the road waiting for him to come home. The father saw him, and the father felt compassion for him. When did he feel compassion for him? Just when he saw him. Just seeing him come home, he saw him from a distance, and he was compassionate. What did the son think? Well, the son thought, well, I've got to say certain things and do certain things because he's not going to accept me. Because their view of their father was that he really doesn't really love us. We have to do right things the right way or he won't love us and we won't be worthy of his love. And so the father goes back in the house and sits at his desk and waits for him to come into the office. Is that what happens? No. The father felt compassion, and the father's compassion that he felt was toward his son as if he was his son, and he ran to his son. Now, in this culture, again, that's why it's so hard sometimes when we read parables that are 2,000 years old, because it's hard for us to understand these little nuances in our culture because we don't do some of these things the same way. But in this culture, for the patriarch of the household to run to someone less than him is unheard of. In other words, the father would wait and the child would run to him. Or the man of the house would wait for the wife to run to him or the children to run to him because they are all considered secondary. The father and the patriarch is considered primary and everyone looks up to him. That's how this culture was. And yet this father who has the right in that culture to expect the child to run to him and him not to run to the son, he runs to the son. He runs down the path to meet him. This would be undignified and inappropriate for a family patriarch to do. But that is what this father does. And not only does the father run to him, but when the father reaches his son, he grabs him and he hugs him and he kisses him. Again, in this culture, for a man my age, if I were a man in that culture, for me to touch you at all would mean that you're clean, and that you're somehow in a good place with God. In other words, I wouldn't touch someone who was a sinner because they're considered unclean. right? That would cause me to be contaminated somehow. So this father is breaking all the rules by running out to his son, grabbing his son, kissing his son. And here still, the son says, after all this happens, the son says, Father, I have sinned against God, and I have sinned against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Now, is the son correct? Is he worthy? He's right. He isn't worthy in this culture. In this culture, he's not worthy. In his culture, the father could rightly say, the whole community would say, you did the right thing when you told him to go back to where he came from. That's what the culture would have said, was you did the right thing by kicking him out and by telling him he's dead to you. That's what kind of culture this is. The father said nothing to him. He spoke no words. Did you hear this? He ran to him. He hugged him. He kissed him and embraced him. But he didn't say a word to this younger brother. The father says to his servants, so he calls out to the servants in the field out along the roadside, and he says, hurry, hurry, bring the best clothes and put them on my boy. Hurry, hurry, put a ring on his finger. Hurry, hurry, and put sandals on his feet. Hurry, get the fatted calf and kill the fatted calf, because we're going to have a party, because my son was dead, but now he is alive again. My son was lost, but now he is found. And so they began to celebrate. Now, this is incredible language because of this issue of how this culture saw people, you're dead to me, you're dead to me, that kind of language. So what does the father say? Because the son has been what? Dead to the father. And the father has been dead to the son. And when the son comes home and says, Father, Father, please forgive me. I've sinned against God. I've sinned against you. What I've done has just been terrible. I'm so sorry. The father has already said everything he needs to say. He has ran out to him. He has embraced him. He has hugged him and kissed him. He has already said, welcome home, right? He doesn't waste any time explaining to the son why he's taking him back. He just says, let's get this party going. Because my son was dead, but now he is alive. So what happens after the party gets going? So the older son, he's at church teaching the credit roll class. Verse 25, the older son was in the field. And the older son came closer to the house. And as he got closer to the house, he heard the sound of the music and the laughter and the dancing. And the older son summoned one of the servants and asked, what's going on up there? And the servant said, well, your brother has come home. Your father killed the fatted calf, and your brother came home safely. Your father has called for a celebration. And the older son was angry. Why is he angry? You think he ever thought about leaving home and running wild? Of course he did. He thought about it a lot. He thought about breaking all the rules. I'll tell you a quick story. I knew a gentleman years and years ago who, when he was growing up as a young man, he had grown up in the Baptist church, and he came to hang out with the Church of Christ folks. And at that particular congregation, they were pretty legalistic about you having to do certain things a certain way, the way that they interpret it to be, or you weren't even a Christian. And so he was told in order to be a part of the church family, he had to be baptized again, and they had to say the things over him that were the right things to say, right? And so he believed that was the case, that God had not accepted him as a Christian, that he could not have become a Christian through the path that he had walked on his journey. And so he accepted that hook, line, and sinker. He was trying to obey the rules. 20 years later, new eldership, new leadership, a lady comes to church there. She's grown up in the same Baptist church, and she's accepted on her baptism and her confession of faith as a Christian. She was not asked to do some other rule different. Guess what that man said? He said, I will not be a part of a church that what? That doesn't make her follow the same rules you made me follow. And he left the congregation. Was his relationship, and I'm not judging him, but we're just talking about the nuances to this. What was he concerned about? The rules. Doing the legalistic thing the right way, because he was told he was wrong before and God hadn't accepted him, and now he's right because we say you are. And then 20 years later, some lady comes in and she's accepted as being, you're good, we think you're good. All of a sudden, it's different. And he is angry. He is furious because this younger sister got what? She got by with not having to follow these rules. And this happens all the time. Older brothers and older sisters. Logan can tell you. Her older siblings are always angry at her about something because she gets stuff they didn't get. Right? There's a story of a fella who had three daughters. His first daughter wanted to get an earring. And dad said, no, that's just wrong and sinful. We're not going to have earrings. You're not going to wear earrings. Because he was taught as a kid growing up that if you wear earrings, it makes you look like a prostitute. So he was concerned about that. And so he told her no. So then the middle child came along and she went to visit her aunt in another state. And while she was in another state with her aunt, she got her ears pierced. And she came home. And this was years later, a few years later, because she's younger. And the dad's like, what happened? What did you do? And she said, well, this is what happened. And he's like, oh, well, you already done it, so I guess it'll be okay. The oldest daughter, the last I heard, the older daughter refuses to pierce her ears to this day. Because why? Because the rules changed. You see, the older brother is staying home and he's keeping the rules. He gets up every day and does what he thinks he has to do to get the things he wants. He is not in relationship with God. And in this situation, he's not in relationship with his father. The older brother was angry. The older son would not go into the feast. He refused to go into the feast. Now look at this, in verse 28, the older brother would not go into the party, he would not go into the celebration, but his father went out to him. You see that? It's the same. Both boys did not get their daddy, did not understand the father's love for them. They did not understand how to love the father, and they both had been running away from the father. Yeah, the prodigal son, he's the one that's on the front page of the newspaper for going to jail and getting in all the trouble. But Jesus says to have a legalistic view of God is not to have it's not a different relationship with God. So sometimes we get prideful and we get caught up in doing right and I do it the right way and I follow all the rules so I'm somehow, God likes me better. Well, that's not what's happening in this parable. Jesus is saying we can be just as distant from God in our pride and our self-righteousness as we can be if we just go off and run wild. Because the issue of what is faith is relationship with the Father. He said, he replied to the Father when the Father went out to encourage him to come into the party. He said, look, I have served you like a slave for all these years. I have never disobeyed your commands. I've done everything you've ever told me to do. And you never gave me a party. You never gave me a celebration. You never even gave me a young goat for a feast with my friends. But your other son, he squandered all your money on prostitutes. And he comes home and you kill the fatted calf for him. And the father said to him, my son, my child, you are always with me. And all that I have is yours. You see, we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. We don't know if we'll get everything the way we want it. We don't know if things will go bad. We don't know if we'll be happy or sad. We don't know if we'll be rich or poor. But what we do know is we serve a God who is always abiding, always faithful, and always there for us. God is not far away from you until you do a bunch of stuff and him say, okay, now I like you. And it's all, God doesn't want us to run wild and spend our money on prostitutes either, right? That's wrong too. But legalistic self-righteousness, thinking, well, I've done everything I need to do, so God has to take me now. That's not any more holy or righteous than the one who rebels and runs away. So today I want you to think about, not are you one of these people, but what do you do with both of those parts of yourself? Because we all have that part, you know? There are days that you think, why am I even messing with this? I don't get all this church stuff. I don't know. Maybe I should just forget it. And others of us are thinking, well, I'm working harder than that person across the pew, and I do more, and I read more, and I study more, and so I don't understand why they're not where they're supposed to be. Our relationship with God is our relationship with God. And my brothers and sisters and their journey should not be a roadblock for me and my Father, because my Father loves me, and he loves the other children as he sees fit. Let us all stand together and let's sing.